You're down 4 or 5 R, glued to the screen, praying to get back to break even. That feeling? It's not strategy. That's your nervous system looking for an off-ramp. Today, we're talking about when hope stops being your ally and starts costing you money.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is to just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Trading Endgame, our ongoing mini-series with Sound Performance Psychology's Sean Sawyer that's leveling up our emotional maturity. And since we've started here, we've covered fear, greed, shame, anger, and euphoria. You check the show notes for links if you want to catch up. But tonight, we find ourselves just like Pandora after she couldn't contain her curiosity and let all those evil emotions out of her box. Find ourselves left with hope. But before we jump into that, I want to say a quick thank you to everyone who sent me in questions before we start recording this. Hopefully, we'll be able to get to them all before we wrap today. And I say that facetiously. We will definitely answer all those questions. Sean, how are you doing today, man?
I'm swell. How are you doing today?
Swell. Wow, that's the first time you use that word. So, Sean, you've got us, I think, a clinical definition of hope to start with. Maybe we want to lead off with that.
I have a definite. I don't know if there's a clinical definition of hope or not, but I guess I want to define hope in maybe hopium, but you know, hope I would say is adaptive. So there's a dude, Thich Nhat Hanh is where I first kind of started to think about this stuff. He's a Buddhist monk. He's a Vietnamese monk, Buddhist monk, Zen Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. Who got like exiled from Vietnam because he was helping both sides.
Thou shalt not.
Yeah, he was just going to help the humans. He didn't really care what side they were on. So he got exiled. And his Buddhism kind of was adapted for Westerners because of that. And so if you're going to look at Buddhism, it's a pretty good place to look because it isn't contextualized for 6,000 years ago, China or India, you know,
it's like right.
More it's a little Western, more modern. One of the practices of his flavor of Buddhism is not to invest in shitty companies. You know, it's like there's literally a thing about like, don't put money into companies that destroy the planet or hurt people or whatever.
Wow. Yeah. I would not have thought of that as being part of Buddhist tenets.
Yep.
Responsible investing or ethical investing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so he had some writings on hope then?
There's a couple of quotes. Hope is important because it can make the present moment less difficult to bear. If we believe that tomorrow will be better, we can bear hardship today. But then as the caveat, I believe that tomorrow will be better. When I think deeply about the nature of hope, I see something tragic. Since we cling to hope in the future, we do not focus our energies and capabilities on the present moment. We use hope to believe something better will happen in the future. Hope becomes kind of an obstacle. A kind of obstacle.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Huh. So is hope maybe to blame for some of my procrastination tendencies, maybe?
Yes. Theoretically.
Yeah.
At least, yeah.
I can see that because a lot of times, like, a lot of my times my reasoning for not doing something now is that maybe I won't need to do it in like a week. Like with the deadline's 2 right. weeks from now, like, you know, a lot can change.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
So, you know, going with that hope, a belief or expectation of a better future, which gives us strength now. That's a good thing on its surface, right?
Right.
That's a great thing. But if you're a trader, is that what you want?
Yeah, because everything is about the now when you're trading.
Exactly. Huh. And if we leave the now, if we go off into the future and leave the present moment behind, which is like anti everything I've ever talked about on here and everything right. I teach in the workshops and like the core of the work I do, you have to leave that behind to really for hope to be useful. And there's not a place to leave that behind in the context of trading, I don't think. In investing, there is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's not trading.
Right, because, well, investing, you're looking at longer-term horizons anyway. The goal of investing is to not do anything now.
Correct. It's about the future. It is right. not about the present moment. So it's
in trading, it is about the present moment. You're doing things now to make
only
money.
Only the present moment. And right. You know, we call it price action, but I call it the present moment. Same
thing. I like that. Trading. Yeah. Okay. So I guess that explains then why you don't like hope when it comes to trading, but
that's my aversion to hope. Yes.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, so you look at a typical definition of hope, and this would be the one, like I would say to a, you know, if a client asked me or something, like a mental health client, you know, a grounded adaptive mindset that orientates the mind towards possibility. Oh. In psychological terms, hope involves both agency, the belief that one can influence outcomes, and pathways, the perceived ability to find routes to desired goals.
Okay, the pathways part I think is interesting. I feel like you need that in order for hope to be at least effective. Because if you're just hoping to win the lottery, like, okay, what's your plan? I'm going to go buy lottery tickets? Like, that doesn't seem like a very solid plan, right?
Right. Right. That is, you know, the perceived ability to find routes toward desired goals. And so also think about that. Perceived ability.
Perceived ability. Okay.
If you've ever looked at FinTwit, you can see a lot of people that perceive ability that is not realistic. That good perceive point. Their own abilities that are right. to be something that they are not. You know, you talk to with all due respect to new traders out there. I hope you keep listening because you should. But, you know, you talk to a new trader and they're convinced of something. I talked to a new one recently that was like, or a newer one, I think less than like 2 years. It was talking about like, you know, I can't help but shorting the top. You know, mm-hmm. shorting these all-time highs. It's just like, that is... And the arrogant, like, I don't even think he's arrogant. He doesn't even know how delusionally arrogant that is and just how, like, self-destructive. It's like, ha, 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 I can't possibly go with the flow. You're going to go broke, mofo. people with a lot more money and a lot more experience and a lot smarter have gone a lot broker.
What do you think all these rallies are based on? It's off of somebody with money trying to do the same thing you're doing.
Right, like... It's imaginary, you know, and that's a key thing you hear in this definition of hope. And I think when you slide in, and so continuing that, and this is kind of like getting into some of my theoretical training, but, you know, hope integrates cognition, emotion, and connection. It's the neural and relational capability to imagine a future worth acting towards despite uncertainty.
Future worth acting towards. Despite uncertainty,
hope.
But see, in that case, it sounds like hope would be driving action, but.
Like, that is what it's saying. And that does drive action a lot of times. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we talk trading, it becomes very problematic.
Yes.
And you know, considering trading is one of many contexts we exist in as traders. It's easy to overgeneralize. It's like the discipline thing. You know, I crush it in the gym. Why aren't I disciplined in trading? Well, they're very different things. That's what it is. And you have very different value, and the values motivating them are very different. And that's actually the bigger one. But you know, we've talked about that. So hopium, you know, unrealistic or intoxicating optimism. It's a cognitive. You know, it's a lie. Some old psychology would call it a cognitive distortion. I would call it a fused thought. in which a belief in a desired outcome replaces contact with reality. Often leading to avoidance of data, denial of feedback, or poor decision making.
Okay. So the cold, I don't know if we're going to use the cold open that we did there or not, but the example there being you're sitting in a trade after you've taken a couple of losses, and you basically, the feeling you have now is the hope that this trade is going to work. This is going to be the one that gets you back to break even. This is going to be the one that wipes up all the mistakes. So what ends up happening is you end up staring at that screen, hoping that it's going to go your way, but you start ignoring all of the data that's coming in. You're telling you that, like, hey, this is stupid. You should not be betting on yourselves right now, or you should be cutting this. This is, you know what I mean? Like, you just start ignoring all that information.
You're intoxicated.
But then that's hope not driving. That's hope driving inaction, right?
So inaction is an action according to behavior.
That's a good point. Okay, okay.
Like a thought kind of is behavior according to behaviorism, kind of everything is. But
right,
the inaction is a behavioral choice.
See, in that case, it's a choice. But I was actually curious if that was more related to like the fight, flight, or freeze aspect of stress response. So hope is how you basically justify freezing.
In trading, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if justify is – say more about that. What do you mean by that? Justify.
I don't know if justify is the right word, but it's how I can.
Interesting way to put it.
Yeah. It's the way that I can argue to myself that I shouldn't touch this one because I've already put the risk on. I need to let it work itself out. Like, hope is my way of keeping myself from interfering with my trades.
Hope is the way I stop myself from interfering with my trades. If you're a swing trader. It's a really interesting question. Yeah. And I think this illustrates some of the complexities of it. Time frame matters when you're talking hope.
Right.
Think about those definitions, a grounded adaptive mindset that orients the mind towards possibility. That is a long time. Possibility is a big time frame.
You're saying it's not from, this afternoon?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. You know, and then, you know, the intoxication of the hope, the you know, when it's relieving, you know, worry, or when it's like, all right, when it's rationalizing the fucking huge mistake you made and relieving. You're down a bunch of money.
Relieving the embarrassment,
shame.
The shame of the losing trades that you just took that didn't work.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh. So hope's, I think that explains.
MF-er.
What's that?
Hopium's an MF-er. It's just cruel, man.
Yeah,
we just don't know why. Because you know, again, we're lit, we're intoxicated, and we don't know what we're doing,
dude. I mean, yeah. I hate to back up a little bit, but ever since we did that Euphoria episode, I've been legit questioning every happy feeling I've had since then. Like, oh my God, what? What am I feeling relief from? What is this relieving me? What?
Oh, shit.
Right?
Remember, outside of trading, you can put an asterisk next to it. But yeah, that's funny. It's worth exploring. I mean, we are extremely skilled at being avoidance. Maybe avoidant is a topic we should do in the future.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, we're just so good at avoidance, and that's one of the many ways we can tap into avoiding.
Pretty sure I made a career out of it. That's my middle name is avoiding.
I'm pretty good at it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, anyone that has experienced trauma, whether you have PTSD or anything close to PTSD or not at all, we've all experienced some trauma. PTSD and anything close to it is a condition of avoidance. You know, we want to avoid the things that bother us. We'll do anything we can to avoid them. So it's something that, you know, that's one of those reasons why I'm always like, you know, trading in and of itself might be your avoidance strategy. Be careful. Check your psychological macros and mesos and micros before you start trading, because you might be avoiding something in your life, and then you're going to, you know, and that's just reminded because I tweeted last night on Halloween about my buddy who passed, and kind of inspired me to start this whole business and all that. And that was, you know, when I discovered like, oh shit, I am trading, because even though I'm getting my ass kicked and losing money, it still feels better than grieving my friend who's dead at 39, you know?
You know, to be completely honest with you, I feel like I've been trading less lately because of that, because it's sometimes when I step to the screen, it feels like I'm trying to avoid something. And
interesting.
When I can recognize that, then that's usually a sign for me to close up the shop and, you know, come back a different day, or maybe take 30 minutes to go reset and do something else, come back later, see if it still feels like that. But I don't know, it's something about just, I guess, maybe it's all the discussions on these emotions that we've been having, but it's just starting to feel like there's a lot more awareness of, like, the whispers that are, that they're, they whisper to you, you know, the warning signs. Yeah, and
there'll be a period of time, you know, as you're discovering that, as you're enhancing that self-awareness, there'll be a period of time where it is overwhelming, or it is unpleasant, or it is slowing down your training. But that is good,
because I assume it is.
The other side of it in a good spot.
Yeah. So, should we talk about the three faces of hope then?
Sure.
Or have we done that? I don't think we've done that yet. All right, so you have three types listed in here. You've got a revenge trader, swing trader paralysis, and hot hand gambler. Do you want to walk through those scenarios? Or those types, or how do you want to handle this?
I'm just looking for that section. Hang on a second.
Segment two.
Oh, geez, I'm looking at segment six. Where did I get there? Okay.
Oh, I know what swing trader paralysis is. Can I try?
Yes.
Finding this one? All right. I find myself, say, I'm trying to take a long on a dip when, you know, markets are selling off. My area doesn't hold, but I'm sitting there moving my stop because I think that I've convicted myself into thinking this is going to be the spot. But then as it starts going against me, I start freezing, thinking that, oh, they're doing it a little differently than I anticipated, but I'm still right. So my instinct is to take my hands off, widen the stops, and then just turn it into a swing trade, knowing that it's going to come back in the next week or two if it doesn't happen today.
You got it.
Yeah?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
I think we've all done that, right?
I think so, too. I think we convince ourselves of this. And again, think about the definition I gave. It's that, you know, that hold off into the possibilities.
I think I still have some shares of like Purple Mattress or something that I've been holding for fucking probably 3 or 4 years because of that.
I have some OTC tickers that are probably just dead shells that every once in a while, they even lose their bids. It's hilarious. They won't even, like, you go on that you can't even, there's like no bid.
There's one or two that I'd like to be able to get rid of just so I could eat the loss.
Yeah.
They don't even trade anymore. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the swing trader paralysis has definitely cost me money. What's the hot handed gambler one, though? I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Hopium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is good. You've had these wins. It feels good. Your brain is starting to fuse with thoughts like I can't lose, or I'm just in touch, or whatever. And you know, before I even keep going on this path, there's going to be people that right now are like, hey, you got to strike while the iron's hot. And yes, you do have to strike while the iron's hot, for sure. And if you don't have the self-awareness to differentiate these two things, you will not strike while the iron's hot. You will hopium yourself to death. You know?
We talked a lot about that during the euphoria episode too. Yeah. Like, are you euphoric or are you confident? Like, there's a difference, right?
Yeah. And that's what a lot of the hot handed gambler thing is. It's a euphoric
mm-hmm.
state.
Okay.
It's, you know, hoping, hope turned into like a rationale for I'm hot. I got to do what I can do. I got to keep hitting, you know, it keeps like, oh, I should stay up. I should just trade overnight tonight. I'm going to trade Globex. I'm going to take a nap and then get up and, you know, trade the London Open for at least for the futures guys. Like, it's just, it's the excitingly bullshitting yourself.
That sounds like the feelings of like the new trader, like right when we first get into it.
I think so. And I think that, you know, if you don't, this stuff, it's going to sound real easy, like conceptually, but you know, unless you're, and I don't intend it to, cause it's not easy, but if you're journaling, if you're logging this data, if you are collecting your emotional data, I mean, it's the closest thing we can do to backtesting for our such for trading psychology. And, you know, if you're doing that, you're going to have an idea of, oh, I have done this before and I have something to measure against now. Is this the same? I'm going to look at these notes, you know, is this the same as then? And, you know, you do that by, cause you'd be honestly documenting and you'd have, you know, P&Ls of course in there. So you would see blow ups, you would see large wins, you'd see whatever, so that, you know, the next time it comes around, you have something to compare against. Cause maybe you are really hot. I'm not, you know, that is a thing. And that is a thing that, You should, I mean, bull markets, yes, put your foot on the gas. I get it. You know, there's a lot of reason to start buying when things are moving and when there's a lot of money flowing in the market. And if you're telling yourself a story about what's going to happen and getting excited about it, it's hope, and you're going to get yourself in trouble.
So one thing I heard in there that really stood out to me was it sounds like pattern recognition. Like we spend a lot of time on chart patterns, but this is emotional patterns, behavioral patterns.
Just, I would just call it psychological patterns for the sake of ease. It is technically, it's probably behavioral,
but it's patterns within ourselves and how we act. And
exactly. It's interoceptive patterns. If you really want to get real technical about it, but that's
a good word.
Yeah. It is pattern recognition. And, you know, again, why do we spending three more hours on the charts. Now, why don't you meditate while you're at your kid's soccer game and kill two birds and, you know, be there, be present, and be worrying about your charts rather than blowing it off and staring at charts for three more hours. Your kid will be happier, you're going to be happier, and it turns out you'll make more money.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
Should we talk about what healthy hope looks like?
Sure.
So I think we can kind of sum up unhealthy hope as things that, well, how would you sum up unhealthy hope? Let's maybe start there before we move on. Like, what are some of the hallmarks that the hope that you're experiencing is not conducive to your higher goals?
You focus on the future at the cost of the present.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're saying, you know, it'll get better. It'll turn around. You know, whether it's a Tesla option or a futures contract or you know, the relationship with your wife, you know, if you're constantly saying like, oh, things will get better and, you know, you're neglecting what you could do right now for it, things to get better, you're in trouble in your marriage or in your trade.
When you're using hope as an excuse to not do the things that will actually get you to the goals.
Bang.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. So now, how does a healthy hope differ then?
I'm gonna go through a couple more negative aspects.
Oh yeah, okay. Let's do that first.
So depending on relying on external things, as in like the market turning around.
It's everybody else needs to catch up.
Beyond your control, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Not quite to say this, because the idea is like, you have to grow from pain.
Mm-hmm.
And hope alleviates pain.
So like it blades it almost. Right?
Yeah, you're avoiding part of the growth process, I think, sometimes with hope.
Though today was a bad day, I don't need to review my journal. I'll just come back at it tomorrow and hit and do things the right way. I don't need to review the mistakes I made.
Yeah, like, yes, you do. Flowers grow from mud, you know, stuff
shit.
Grows in shit. Exactly. That's where stuff grows from. That's fertile. Mm-hmm. This is fertile for us. You know, just the other thing is wanting, you know, greed. We might call it that, but I think wanting is a little different. But that's another thing that'll, you know, is a problematic with hope, is because it just, like, oh, it's going to come. I'm going to, you know, you're just fantasizing about something you want and you get all intoxicated thinking about it. I was just watching a video earlier today of this like fancy RV I love, mm-hmm. I like my dream. I would like to, like, you know, live in an RV and travel the country as I work. Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Of course, over the years, my standards for what I'd want it to be have gone up quite a bit from like the time I actually did an RV, did own an RV that I could live in. It's about what I'll I bet you that use now.
I'll bet you that bathroom has gotten much more important.
Exactly. I saw a crazy RV with a, you know, with a freaking cold plunge in it. Talk about a trendy healthcare. It was just, it was unbelievable. But anyway, these are like $2 million devices. Jeez. But, you know, you get sucked into that kind of nonsense, whether it's that or a car or a house or whatever it is, you know, like that's the longing or attachment dangerous part of hope.
That's the dreaming, though. I mean, some
Dreaming, attachment, like that's all kind of similar stuff.
Like, what's the difference between that and having goals then? I mean, I guess the difference is you're working towards them when you're, as opposed to just hoping that they come.
I'm not sure, but goals aren't really necessarily the way to go, right?
Oh.
Goal values thing.
Values, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what the difference is. And that's why I think goals are kind of problematic versus values. I don't have a great answer for that. I think they are pretty similar.
Ready to nerd out on the tech shaping tomorrow? Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025, is back for season 2. We're featuring pioneers rocking Web3, AI, and blockchain innovation. So get the scoop on the people powering the next wave of innovation by subscribing now wherever you get your podcasts. And join us for the fun in September at bostonblockchainweek.com for the killer talks, epic vibes, and top-tier networking. And if you happen to run into me or my wife, come see us, because we probably have unused drink tickets. Eric, why should people listen to season 2?
I'm really excited for season 2 because what's interesting is that we talked about the founding of America. You know, we set that foundation. And now we're going to watch America try and build a house that will become divided and burned down.
And, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly.
Yeah, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly. It's going to end with the nation ripping itself apart, the founding of the best Virginia, and, you know, the suspending of habeas corpus. about as broad as you get it. But what's going to be cool is what emerges from season 2 is the foundation for the world's largest, most advanced economy.
You visit the website, buckstartsherepodcast.com, to stay up to date. We'll see you all next week.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com, and that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
I would venture a guess that the difference would be goals would be something that you have a plan towards getting to, as opposed to hope, where you're just hoping it comes to you.
Yeah, exactly. Earlier, the definition talked about having an actual plan,
right? Right.
Not. Yes. So absolutely. That is, that's a piece of it.
Okay. So
healthy hope.
Yeah. So healthy hope sounds like it's achievable, or something that you can actually plan towards getting to.
Yeah. It's more grounded.
Right. Okay. That's a good word. Yeah.
Yeah. Grounded. It's not some pie in the sky. It's not dreaming. It's,
yes.
People call it based, I guess, nowadays, but no, hope, grounded, adaptive, you know, it involves agency, which means like you are going to take action, and you see it in a way that it's like this thing I can take action on. Like, oh, I hope I can become a therapist. Like, I can go to school. I can take the classes. I can do the internships. I can get the clinical hours. I can get the supervision. You know, there's tangible things. I hope I'm going to do it. But like, you're actually taking steps.
Is your hope driving action towards that desired outcome?
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's an overlap of values and hope too.
Yes.
In this non-trading, you know, bigger picture just to clearly do.
Well, there's going to be hope in trading too, but there's probably some healthier versions of that, or can manifest in some better ways.
Yes, I'm slipping hopium in there as hope.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so speaking of that, then should we talk about some practical interventions?
Yes, we should.
So we talked a bit about the awareness, how I'm starting to find myself. I've actually cut some trades the past couple of weeks because I've noticed that they were basically they had run far enough to where I was, anything more was just hope, not actually anything, you know, based on that. There's no technical analysis or anything. So I've cut trades. So I feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to recognize when hope is driving my trades. But I mean, obviously we can all get better at that. So I mean, I guess what are some of the signs or things that we can do to try to catch ourselves when, or ways that we can notice when we're falling into that hopium's, what's a good heroin analogy I can use there? Falling into the grasp of the hopium den.
Hopium den. Woo. Well, you have to have the baseline to compare it against.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be collecting that data. You have to be journaling. You have to, you know what your baseline is to compare it against, because the further it strays, you're going to start to notice. So there's that, but also what you're talking about requires some self-awareness, some mindfulness, and some paying attention too.
Yeah.
It requires all of those things. If you're familiar with my work or our work in the workshop, like it's the grounding stuff is going to help with that a lot. Noticing when you're operating it, when you're feeling too good or too bad, like when you're feeling at the extremes for yourself emotionally, like just like stopping, cutting trades, taking a break, getting away, setting brackets and leaving the room, like whatever. You don't have to kill your trades, but put the brackets on what is sticks with the plan and get the hell out of there.
Right.
You
know, right.
And come back in a while. That's personally one of my favorite things to do, is just
set a bracket and go away
and leave.
Yep.
I don't even want to watch it. You know, I don't always really care what happens.
If I sit and watch it, I tend to make more mistakes.
Yeah. I won't like ignore. Yeah, exactly. I like to leave or, you know, come back. If it's all played out by then, fine. If not, like, it's not like I'll leave until it does play out, but it is just a reset, you know, just to get away from it and all that.
It's interesting because it's almost like the longer I stare at a chart, the worse my decision making becomes. So, like, if I could set the trade, walk away, come back, check on it, take a look. Okay, everything's acting normally. We don't need to do anything. We'll walk away, come back later. Like, I feel like that's when I'm making the best decisions.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, that is a grounded, you know, practical way to go about things.
But if I think a little bit more, if I think a little deeper on that, I'm starting to wonder now if that's because the longer I stare at it, the more I start to dream and hope and allow that to kind of take over. Where if I'm limiting my screen time, I'm limiting the amount of opportunity I have to fall into that.
It could be, but I think you could do as much hoping or fantasizing it's screen or not. You know,
that's true. That is true.
I think that's going to be an individual thing for each person, and just something they've got to pay attention to is when it happens, because it can happen anywhere.
Yeah. So talk to me about how we challenge these thoughts and tell them that they're wrong and stop them from running our lives.
Oh, did right? you chew that up for me?
Maybe.
You do not challenge them. You notice them. You defuse from them. You develop the skills and abilities to notice the thought. No, it's just a thought, and remind yourself it's just a thought, and let that thought slide by like a leaf on a stream or a cloud in the sky.
Yes.
And you know, hope is often going to come with they all do, but maybe more intoxicating ones. Hope's going to come with more feelings, urges, emotions, sensation. And so, you know, having an idea what your heart rate is, if it's up, if it's down, you know, if you're like really paying attention to what you're feeling. You know, if you were stressed and then you start thinking about, you know, your Lambo and then you feel better, like that's a problem.
Mm.
You know, if you, that's something to pay attention to.
the relief that feels like another one that's kind of coming up, same as like euphoria.
You're leaving yourself with hope. Yeah. And actually, that example I gave probably isn't a good one. You know, it's because if you're relieving yourself by thinking about things related to your values, that's different, because those are usually pretty sobering. Like they're mm-hmm. they might be pleasant or good, but they're not usually, you know, fantasy. You know, versus hope and whatnot tends to get into like fantasy or more extreme. The values are just like, I want my family to do well, or I want to be able to take vacations with them. There's nothing wrong with thinking about that. There's nothing wrong with imagining the vacation or visualizing. Some people, you know, vision boards or visualizing. That's not what we're talking about either. We're talking about taking a trade while you're fantasizing about going to Greece with your family. And it's a ridiculous trade because you're intoxicated as you're doing it.
Because we've somehow now
on opium and your opioid system's lit. Your you know, dopamine, of course, as everyone talks about, but your cannabinoids, everything, oxytocin, like all this stuff's flowing, and you're just like, oh, it's such a great idea, and then it feels more and more right. But you know what? Maybe you are right. If you have a baseline and you know yourself and you've done that in the past and it's worked, great. But if you don't have a baseline, you don't know. And then if you do have a baseline that doesn't match successful trades, then maybe it's greed. Maybe it is hope. You know, this is not easy. This is much like everything in trading takes time. This is a, you know, time consuming process of you know, collecting this data. I think it's good to have a systematic way to do it, and that would make a difference. But to each their own, how you want to do that. But I think the other side of this is, and this might sound silly for me to say, you could not do any of this and you'll mm-hmm. learn it in 20 years. Like,
oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like Crudelli and
if you can stick around long enough,
who've been really successful and share their wisdom, but good luck sticking around that long.
Right.
You know, and my goal with like my workshop and all that stuff, it's in this work is like, cut that time down. It is so unnecessary to have to learn from all your mistakes and all that in this business when you've already learned from a bunch of mistakes. Children don't start trading. This is an adult game. We've been through shit. Like, we do not have to go through the hard knocks that all these guys have gone through. Thank God they're around to share their wisdom with us and perspective, but we don't have to do it.
My favorite quote from growing up was, a prudent man learns from his mistakes, but a wise man learns from the mistakes of others.
Boom. That's good.
Right? Yeah, that's a good quote. Too bad it came from a douchebag.
Who's a douchebag?
My stepdad.
Oh. I'm sorry. Right on.
All right. So, practical interventions. I think we got through that. The real edge. I think I got some questions here that we can get to. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on yet as far as it relates to hope and any other messages you want to get out there? Anything more with...
Just the paying attention to this stuff is edge.
That's a great point.
You know, people want whatever they talk about. Like, this is edge.
To expound on that a little bit more. Because
people don't do it. People aren't doing this work. You know, if the enlightened trader has an advantage over the unenlightened trader, period.
How many people have said the markets run on emotions?
A lot.
How many people that say that do you think have actually taken the time to study their own?
I don't know. 1 in 1,000.
Yeah.
1 in 100 would be a very optimistic number, I think.
I think your 1 in 1,000 is probably closer. And I bet you that probably mimics the success rate of traders in this industry.
That's true. Yeah. You know, even if we're dead wrong and it was 1 in 10, still 90%, like, do it. Be the 1 in 10.
Yes, right. No. Be the outlier. All right, let's see some questions here then. So I think we've actually hit most of these.
Okay.
Okay. We kind of talked a little bit about this, but I guess, like, how often is hope not constructive in our lives outside of trading? Like, we talked about how hope was not constructive during trading or hopium, but how often, I guess, is hope showing up in not helpful ways in our lives?
So this is a really big question. It's a good question, but it's a very big one. So as I've said before, hope is, you know, not something you want to take away from somebody. It's not something you want to shit on.
Just want to like crush everyone's hopes and dreams.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is, if you've heard that throughout this episode, please listen again because that's not what is being said. But so the question was problematic hope.
Yeah, like how often is hope problematic outside of trading?
So something that's interesting that I've in my career, to me that is interesting anyways, as my career has unfolded, what happens is in the natural progression of most therapist careers, like you start out working in mental health clinics, community clinics, and you know, kind of develop your specialty. And then eventually we all kind of end up, or I shouldn't say it, a lot of us end up in private practice because mm-hmm. it's one of the only ways to make a decent living. You have to have it, like only certain people can really do it. Like not every therapist can handle private practice. And that's because the higher and higher functioning people get, the more and more difficult they are to help because defense mechanisms become more elegant and life isn't quite as bad. So there's not as much motivation to change. If you're freaking miserable and want to blow your brains out, you got more motivation to change than if like, man, I get bummed out and it's really kind of holding me back, but you know, it's all right. Yeah, there's less motivation. One of the things that I run into in private practice that I did not see a ton of earlier in my career was the defense mechanism of fantasy,
mm-hmm.
And fantasizing and getting through your day fantasizing. And I think now it's really baked into culture with like doom scrolling and shit, there's like the negativity aspect and the little whatever, but there's also, you know, you're just escaping into someone else's reality, into someone else's world, into this drama that like idiots online have created or whatever. It's, you know, and then, you know, people stop thinking for them that whatever, it's a big, big thing. But, anyways, part of that is part of the reason I think it works so well with us is it's fantasy and we like to fantasize. Kids. We learn to fantasize when we're young as a coping mechanism and as just fun and joy and play. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you play whatever, cops and robbers. You play I mean, when I was a kid, it was like G.I. Joe's, Transformers.
Play a lot of Army Men in the Sandbox.
E-Man and shit. Like that's great imagination, right? Like riding your bike. I mean, just the stuff where you're engaging your brain. Like kids need that. Kids do that. Kids are good at that. But kids also use fantasy to escape unwanted reality, which is surviving, and that's fine. But we hang on to that habit as adults, and we use that as adults in our day-to-day life. That's where it gets to be a problem, is where we're, you know, fantasizing to get through the day, and we're, you know, just hoping, and then, you know, 5 years pass and nothing has changed because we've been like wishing something's going to stop us from drinking or whatever the hell it is. That's, you know, that's the problematic side, I hope.
But that's not the same thing then as like that childhood whimsical, like play hope, like, oh, I'm going to just go see what it feels like to be.
Are they different?
They feel different.
They're functioning way different.
I think maybe is the difference. Like what you're using it for.
They're both making shit up.
As a kid, you're just doing it to have fun. But as an adult, if you're using it, I guess, to escape your current reality.
Lie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I could see. Well, thank you, Stinkmaster 4000, for submitting that one. That's a good question.
You're breaking out the greatest hits today.
I know, right? This might be our last one. We're not sure.
That's true. Before the next thing comes.
Before the next thing, yes.
Drop some foreshadowing.
There you go. All right. I think that pretty much covers all the questions I had on here. Difference between hope and optimism, is that we cover that?
The difference between hope and optimism. Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know.
I think I keep coming back to like, is it achievable?
I would. So hope's emotional and relational. It requires attachment to an outcome. Optimism is a cognitive state. It's like a state, more of a static kind of thing, like an expectancy of I'm expecting something can improve. I expect things can go well. I think that's the difference probably.
That's funny. Cause as an optimist, I don't feel like I expect things to go well, but I always find myself looking for the positive.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're bullshitting yourself a little bit.
That could be a lot. But.
It's a good point. And I think that, you know, when you said, I don't know, I'm partly, I mean, that's a, that's a,
yeah.
it's It's a really good question, whoever asked that. And, you know, I think sometimes therapists could ask these questions. It's like, oh, it's like, I don't know. That's like, let's talk to Plato about that. I don't know.
I know, right? Which...
but from as best I can give from a functional perspective, that would be it. It's just, you know, one's micro, one's macro.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, I think we have probably hit everything we set out to hit today. So I hope you have learned a lot with us on this journey through our trading emotions.
Hopefully.
I will. Right. But the work has only just begun. You can continue on this path to enlightenment by visiting soundperformancepsychology.com. You can book a free consultation with our friend Sean here, or you can sign up for one of the many upcoming workshops. Remember to share these with your friends, like and sub on your favorite platform of choice, and we'll see you all next time.
Thank you.
Boom.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.